8. She looks at me, her eyelids drooping to her earlobes, lashes splayed like spider legs. I can no longer read her expression. She might be nervous. I take a strained breath. Remember that time we saw that stupid horror movie in the theater? The one with the machete guy? And you asked us all if we were in a horror movie. Who would die first? And we said you, and you got so mad. Fuck you, she says, laughing. I actually thought about that as I was running. You've been kept alive all this time on spite. What was the order again? You, May, Molly, me. Interesting, she says, tucking a leg beneath her. Her joints screech. So, you don't believe me? No, I tell her, looking at her now, how could I not? I believe you. Are you afraid of me? She asks, smiling to reveal that she's lost every last one of her human teeth. No, I lie. Then I tell the truth. I love you. Because it's still her, isn't it, in some form? And Julie, in any form, is better than no Julie at all. She lets out a sigh of relief that breaks my heart. It sways me to tell her something. I've seen it. Seen what? What took you? What you described. I've seen it, here in the hotel. I hesitate. She's inching too close. Her breath is poison. I've had dreams, visions. She reaches for my hand. Hers is cold, it's ice. Her nails are yellow, overgrown, pointed. For how long they are, they don't look weak. Come with me. What? Let me take you. Take me? Back with me. Back where? Back to Acadia? She shakes her head, shedding hair in the process. It's hard to explain. I don't understand. Panic rises. My blood whirs in my ears. Why would we go there? Because, she says like I'm an idiot. You're lost, Lise. Like I was. You're hurting. I was too, but I'm not anymore. I can give that to you, and we can be together. Together, every day, like we used to be. Jules, I say. I'm afraid to break eye contact, but I do it anyway. I scan behind her. The hallway. The staircase. It smashes into my head like a sledgehammer. Where's Patsy? She turns away. Leaning back casually. What do you mean? Patsy was here. She went upstairs to get my bag. Haven't seen her. We should check on her, I say, standing. We're in the middle of a conversation, she says. It's a voice I know well. She's in her pouting phase. It's the prelude to Julie anger. I'm nervous she hurt herself or something. I cross behind her on the couch. She grabs my arm to stop me. Wait, she says. I pull out of her grip. Elise! I'll be right back, I say, breaking into a power walk / jog. Not a run. It can't look like I'm running away. I expect to walk down the hall, to open the door to my room and find Patsy there, huffing, packing up the rest of my stuff. I expect to get my bag, and tell her she needs to leave the hotel now. I'll insist. I expect to walk with her, past Julie, who will still be sitting in the lounge. I expect Julie to be upset, but I don't expect her to do anything about it. There would be real-life consequences. Julie doesn't like to be caught. She likes to be free. I expect Patsy to get into her car, her frown lines deepening as she begins to understand the scope of what has happened over the past few days, accepting this permanent stain on the reputation of her hotel. She'll cry when she sees it in the rear view, because she won't see it as it looks now. She'll see it in its inevitable end state of disarray. Gables crumbling, balconies collapsed, paint disintegrated. That's the hotel's future. She'll think it's her fault. I expect to start my car with a combination of guilt and relief. I'll plug my phone into my car charger, have 1,000 messages from Molly and May. I'll meet them somewhere, wherever they are now. We'll put this weekend behind us, find a way to move on. I expect time to heal us. I expect to be healed. What I don't expect is to find Patsy dead in the hallway. She's pale, drained of blood. It trails behind her. Her arms are out in front. She's dragged herself this far. There are small tears in the carpet. One of her legs is missing. I can see because her pants are ripped, the fabric wet and red. Her head is twisted to the side, neck broken. Her eyes are open, white like hard-boiled eggs. Her tongue spills out of her mouth. Lise, Julie calls. I step around Patsy. The longer I look at her, the more I want to lean over and shout, "Get up! Stop it! Get up! Elise!" I stumble to my room. The door is locked. Where is my key? I don't have it. I don't have my room key. I try a few other handles along the hall. Locked, 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 locked. There's nothing in my stomach but acid, and it's clambering up my throat. Finally, I find an open door. I step inside. I lock it behind me. My hands so shaky and sweaty, it takes me 3 times to turn the deadbolt. The theme of this room is blue. There's awful neon carpet, a set of leather couches, checkered wallpaper, all blue, a round blue bed covered in blue crushed velvet. There's a set of blue doors on the back wall. They're curved like funhouse mirrors. I open the first, a closet. The second, a bathroom. Between the blue vanity and the blue tub, there's another door. It's so small, I have to duck to get through it. It leads to a sitting area with blue beanbag chairs and a blue wicker armoire. Beyond them is a set of sliding glass doors leading to the balcony. Do I run now? I feel in my pocket for my car keys. I do it again to make sure. I have them. Yes, I have them, right? I don't trust my senses anymore. Did I really see Patsy dead in the hallway? Is my best friend downstairs? Or did I imagine her? Did she really sit across from me, rotting before my eyes? I take out my keys, my wallet. I have everything I need. If I open the sliding doors, I should go to the right. There should be stairs around the corner. There have to be. I don't want to leave unless I know where I'm going. I go back into the bedroom to find the fire escape plan. It's up on the wall by the door. Lise! Distant, she's coming up the stairs. Lise! Elise! She's getting louder, closer. I back away from the door. You didn't let me finish, she says. If you just let me explain. I hold my jaw to keep it from trembling. I'm too afraid to breathe, to move, to blink. After everything I've been through, after everything we've been through, don't abandon me. What choice do I have? What am I supposed to do? Elise! She's right outside my door. Elise? My hand is over my mouth now, holding my face together. If I let go, it'll fall open. I'll scream. Please, she says, her voice breaking. Please! She's crying. Her sobs soak through the door. I'm reminded of all the times I've heard her cry before. How warm her tears were when I wiped them away with my thumbs. How her sniffles were cute and small. Nose hiccups, I called them. I can't help it. It's instinctive. It's reactive. Jules?
Elise?
Don't cry, Jules. Where are you?
I'm here.
Where? Please don't cry. Two fists bang on the door. It cringes.
Open the door,
she says. No.
Why?
Patsy is dead. Haven't you noticed there's a dead body in the hallway, Julie? What the fuck? Her wheezing breath lets me know she's still there. She's thinking.
It doesn't matter,
she says finally. Doesn't matter?
You don't trust me.
Can you blame me? She pounds her fists again. Some dust flies loose.
You didn't let me finish! Patsy's dead! Elise, I swear!
Swear what? Tell me you didn't kill her! I count 5 seconds. It's 5 seconds too long. Tell me it wasn't you. Tell me it was that thing I keep seeing. Tell me it came from Acadia and killed the pig in the kitchen and killed Patsy. Silence.
What got you in the woods, Jules? What hurt you? That's what got Patsy too, right? The tall creature? The one with the long arms and legs? The one I told you about, the one I saw here in the hotel?
Nothing from the other side of the door.
Julie, tell me it was that thing.
I can't.
Why?
If you would just let me explain.
Why, Jules?
You know why.
Say it. Tell me the truth. It was you, wasn't it?
It's been you this whole time. In my room, out on the balcony.
Open the door.
What about the glasses? I saw that girl's glasses in your room. The girl from reception? Why did you have her glasses?
Oh, God. Julie, what did you do?
I don't know why I ask. I don't want her answer. I don't need it. I already know. Everything I doubted, everything I tried to write off as my own crazy paranoia, every creak on the floorboards, every elusive shadow, the noise inside the walls, the substance dripping from the vent that Julie was so quick to dismiss. I know now. I can identify the smell.
Open the door and I'll finish explaining, Julie says. I'll explain everything. You'll understand. I know you will. We get each other. We always have.
I need a minute to think.
What's there to think about? It's me, Lise.
Please. Just a minute. I back away from the door, each step carefully calculated, as quiet as possible. I feel like a marionette again, like I'm suspended over this hideous blue carpet. I'm so terrified that my fear is warping everything in my view. The door is bending in toward me, the walls elongating, the furniture expanding, the floor sinking. The bed begins to creep up the wall. I make it to the bathroom. I crouch through the small door.
Lise?
I get to the balcony. The air is frigid, and it smacks me out of the foggy state of shock I've been operating in. I round the corner, looking for the stairs, but they aren't there. It's a dead end. There's a white lattice fence that's too tall to climb. If I fall, I would fall 7 feet onto concrete. Through the gaps in the fence, I see a hot tub. The goddamn honeymoon suites. I run back to the room. I hear destruction inside. She's breaking down the door to get to me. She won't stop. Julie always gets what she wants. I try the door to the next room, locked. I'm grateful for the stupid shared balcony now. Fuck. The second one down is open. I sneak inside, lock it, draw the curtains. There's a mural of a windmill set back in a field of tulips. The opposite wall is fake stone, like in Molly's room. The other two walls are painted glittery green. There are birdhouses hanging from the ceiling, pink, purple, white, black. They vary in size and intricacy. There are two queen beds, both on top of platforms covered in astroturf. There are a set of wooden chairs and a mustard-colored couch. This room is significantly smaller than any of the others I've been in, and significantly weirder. It's not the ideal place to hide for my life. There's a chance I can escape through the hotel. If she's out on the balcony, I can go into the hall, downstairs, out the front door. I can't hide in here forever, and I know I can't wait her out. I listen. Press my ear to the door. There's a rattling, but it's not coming from out in the hall. It's coming from somewhere behind me, somewhere inside the room. I follow the sound. Beyond the vibrating birdhouses, there's a vent. It's coming loose. Through the narrow slants reach 10 long, gnarled fingers. I go. I open the door and run. I tell myself I'm not going to get caught. I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to make it out to my car. I'm going to call 911. I'm sure of this until I hear her coming down the stairs behind me. I veer off, go right instead of left. I'm running away from the front door. I won't reach it in time. I'm running deeper into the hotel. I don't bother with the rooms. They're probably all locked. I make a left down a flight of tiled steps. The smell of chlorine shoots up my nostrils. The pool is shaped like a giant kidney. The surrounding walls, floor, and ceiling are all faux stone, or real stone. What do I know? Flowering vines hang from the ceiling and weave up the walls. The water is illuminated by green lights. I can see the steam rising in pretty curls. There's a waterfall, a slide. It's a shame I'm not down here to enjoy it. I run past a sign that reads in bright red letters, "No running." There's a sauna, bathrooms/changing rooms. I'm looking for a door outside or another stairwell. I remember from the website a picture of a patio with retro lawn chairs and umbrellas resembling humongous mushrooms. It would make sense for there to be a way to get there from here. I'm not going to get caught. There can't be only one way to get to the pool. I can't be trapped down here. I'm not going to get caught. I put my hand over my chest and feel my heart beating against it. I'm gasping, taking in rapid sips of air. I'm struggling to breathe. It's not subtle. It's not quiet. I need to put myself away somewhere. I run into a changing room and hide. The door locks twice. There's a button on the handle and a bolt up top. I don't like the way it feels to be in here. I'm cornered. I change my mind. When I open the door, Julie is there. Her eyes are bloated. They bulge from mounds of gathered skin. She's covered in sores. There's one that takes up the entirety of her cheek. It's deep pink, but bubbling with yellow pus. I see movement, like there's life inside it. I'm proved wrong immediately. It's not life I'm seeing. It's death. The wound is expanding. I watch it chew away more of her face. She doesn't notice, or she doesn't care. The last strands of her hair fall over to one side. The skin on her scalp has split, and through the gaping lesions, I can see bits of ivory white skull. She smiles at me with a mouth not her own. Her breath carries a dizzying stink. "Found you," she says. "Julie." "Come on," she says. She's holding the door open for me. "I only want to talk." I can't move because I can't catch my breath. My lungs have forgotten how to breathe. She puts a bony hand on my shoulder. "Elise, calm down. Breathe. I'm not going to hurt you." She leads me out to the pool. "Sit," she says. "We can put our feet in." I sit. My hands are shaking with such ferocity, Julie has to take off my shoes and socks. I watch her skinless fingers take my feet and place them in the water. She does it gently, like a patient mother.
I can't believe I had to chase you around this hotel just to talk to you, she says. Do you know how that makes me feel?
I can't answer because I can't speak. My tongue is a coward. It refuses to go out past chattering teeth.
I'm trying to find the right word. Disappointed?
Sorry, I manage. I'm sorry.
We've always been on the same page. I don't get it, she says. I thought you'd want to come with me, be what I am, you and me together again, free.
Together where?
Wherever we want to be.
One of her eyes slips out of place, and she pushes it back in.
And the best part is, you wouldn't be like everyone else anymore. Not like you're like everyone now.
We've always been different. We've always known we were special. I'm not sure where she's getting this from. Julie and I have a lot in common, but not everything. I've never felt different or special. This has happened before when she lumps me into one of her beliefs about the world or about herself, and I'm left to wonder what else she assumes about me. But I never correct her because I know her well enough to know she does it to feel less alone. Or maybe I've made some assumptions of my own. Maybe I only ever saw what I projected onto her, what I wanted to see. Maybe I never really knew her at all.
There's the hunger, but it's really not that bad once you get used to it, she says. I kind of like it because what it really is power, control. We like to be in control.
Doesn't everyone? I don't think I'm a control freak. I don't think she and I ever talked about how we like to be in control. May likes to be in control. I tell her this. She frowns.
I'm not talking about May. I'm talking about us, she says,
her frustration apparent in how she strains on each word. Why me? Why not May? Why not Molly?
They're not like you and me, she says. We love them, but they're not the same. Besides, we're not as close to them. They're closer to each other.
I don't think so, I say. I'm not sure why I'm contradicting her. I felt the same way in the past. Thought about the four of us in rigid terms, us and them. But friendships are mercurial. They're shapeshifters. I've learned to allow them to fluctuate and take new forms. I love my friends. That's all that matters. I would take a day wiping up May's vomit over any day without her. Anything to be in the same place as her, and Molly, too. Even when she's raking me over the coals for my relationship bullshit.
Our friendship is special, she says.
I know it is.
You're my favorite person. You know that, right?
I do now.
You are. I tell you all the time.
You could have changed your mind.
Me? Change my mind? Never.
We laugh weakly.
So, what do you think?
She asks. I don't know what you're asking me. She sighs.
I'm asking you to come with me. Follow me down this new path.
What does that mean exactly?
You just have to trust me.
Julie, I say slowly, you're sick.
I'm not sick.
You are.
I'm not sick. I'm changed.
We can try to find you help. I don't know what else to say.
I don't need help. You're not listening to me.
I am. I'm
telling you the truth. The truth is, you don't want to come with me. I don't get what you're asking me to do. You want me to go with you to Acadia. Then what? I have a job. I have family. Molly, Mabes, I have a life.
What life? All you talk about is how much you hate your life.
The pool lights cycle from green to purple. The whole room's darker now. I'm not happy with where I'm at, I say, softly, vocal kid gloves. But I don't hate my life.
You've told me, verbatim, that you hate it.
That's venting.
Didn't sound like venting to me, she says. I think you like being unhappy. I think you enjoy it. Feeling sorry for yourself, it's safe.
No one likes to be unhappy, I say. If she didn't look the way she looked, if her teeth couldn't rip my arm clean off, I'd shove her into the pool for saying that to me, for being a bitch.
You do. That's why you're still in Buffalo, even though you're done with him. You're afraid of happiness. You're afraid to really live, she says.
Her amber eyes are on fire now as she leans in toward me. She's shrouded in the ethereal glow of the pool lights. It gives her some authority.
You're paralyzed by fear.
She's right. I've made some big mistakes, and now I'm so terrified I'll make another one. I'd rather punish myself for the rest of my life than try to be happy and risk fucking it up more.
You don't have to live in fear anymore, she says. I can give that to you. A new life, Lise.
Right now, I can't imagine anything but fear. Because of the size of her new teeth and how hoarse her voice has become over the past few minutes, it almost sounds like two people speaking at the same time.
Come with me.
Jules,
I can't stay here. That's not an option.
Why not? Don't you want to?
What I want is to go and for you to come with me.
I wish I could escape my body. It's nothing but a casket, an inevitable end. The pool lights turn pink. The color reminds me. Is this about Tristan?
What about Tristan?
I said I was sorry. Nothing happened. I swear to you, we were friends, close friends. We mostly talked about you. She starts to laugh.
What? This is your problem. You make everything about men. You think everything is about a man, a man, a man. This isn't about Tristan. This isn't about your professor. It's about you and me, our happiness, our future.
You're not mad?
No, not really,
she says, still laughing.
You just do things, don't you? Then you feel guilty about them, but you don't think about why. Why you did what you did or why you feel guilty. You're so perceptive, and yet you're the least self-aware person I know. I don't get it.
It's a mean thing to say, because it's true. And, of course, I, not self-aware, didn't know this about myself until now. Something changes. I feel like I've been betrayed somehow. Like she withheld information from me about myself on purpose just to watch me screw up. Like she's not really on my side. She doesn't want what's best for me. I tried to be honest with her, and she's laughing at me. She's not offering me some wonderful new existence. She's trying to drag me down with her. I don't want to go with you, I tell her, ignoring what she looks like in my moment of defiance, forgetting Patsy dead upstairs. She sneers with a non-existent top lip.
What?
I'm not going with you, I say. You do what you have to do. I don't want any part of it. Her hands are around my wrists before I can blink. Her fingers wrap all the way around almost twice. They dig into my skin, muscle, bone, The bruises don't wait.
I'm not gonna watch you make another bad decision, she says, standing.
She releases one of my arms and drags me by the other across the floor. She does it like it's easy, exerting no effort at all. I struggle against her, but her hand doesn't budge. She's not even paying attention.
You'll see. You'll be thanking me. You don't know what's good for you. You never have. I do.
Julie, let me go!
I scream. I'll dislocate my shoulder if I pull any harder. I swing around, writhe like a fish on a line, gain enough momentum to get my legs out in front of her. I clip her foot, and she falls forward, releasing me so she can break her own fall. I launch past her, but she's got my foot. I kick back, harder than I mean to.
God damn!
She looks surprised. Her nose is broken. I can tell because there's no skin there. She laughs, spitting fragments of bone from her mouth. Fixated on the state of her face, I do nothing to fight back. She pins me. She presses her shins and forearms against mine. Her face hovers an inch over my face. I gag at the smell of her, at the sores and simmering wounds that threaten to ooze onto me. She opens her mouth, and I can see all the rows of teeth, her decimated tongue, her wide, red throat. Of all things, of all people, I hear Tristan's voice saying, "It's not Julie." I see Molly, the tension in her brow and jaw as she asked me, practically begged me, to have the conversation. I see May, her sweet, worried expression. I see them crying at Julie's funeral, their arms linked, passing each other tissues and chapstick. 2.5 years, and I've been wrong the whole fucking time. I married myself to this wild, ignorant hope. I allowed myself to think it made me smarter than everyone else, that I knew better. I can add it to the long list of my mistakes. Julie died. She died 2.5 years ago on a solo hiking trip in Acadia National Park. She's dead. I lost her. But I couldn't let her go. I've been clinging to the small parts of her that are left, that are some echo of her former self, because I couldn't accept the change. I couldn't accept that she's not the same. I guess I love her that much. I was willing to take the scraps. Any piece of her was better than nothing. It was better than conceding I didn't recognize this person in front of me. I can't deny it now. As she unbuckles her face, as her mouth expands and closes in.
Julie, please,
I say, and from the sound of my voice, I realize I'm crying. I squirm.
Julie, please. Please, no.
She's not listening. She's not stopping. I wriggle an arm free, pound a fist against the side of her head. I find the few strands of remaining hair and pull. They come free easy, her scalp along with it, with a sound like Velcro. She rips backward. She scurries away from me on her hands and knees. Her spine is arched. The colored lights have changed again. They're red now, and her silhouette shudders in their burn. I push myself back. My head hits the bottom step. I turn and begin to climb. I'm halfway up when I hear her screaming, low, guttural moans.
You abandoned me. You abandoned me. You never loved me.
She's almost getting to me again, almost getting me to stay.
You don't care. You don't care about me.
I never abandoned her. I'm not abandoning her now. She's trying to kill me. I'm lumbering down the hallway. I'm at the lobby. I'm at the front door. I'm going to get away.
You weren't there for me.
I push the front doors. They won't open. I pull. They won't open. I heave my whole weight against them.
You weren't there when I needed you.
She's coming toward me, slowly, a walking corpse. Her skull is entirely exposed. There's some skin on her face still, if it can be called that. One shoulder wilts. She leads with her left foot. The right drags behind.
I needed you, she says.
The doors, Julie. What did you do to the doors?
You weren't there.
You never asked. You never said you needed me. You never asked for my help, I say, banging my fists against the doors, pulling at the handles. How was I supposed to know? She's closing the distance between us.
All you want is to get away from me, she says. You left me. You don't know. You don't want to be my friend anymore.
Julie, you're not the same. I don't know what happened, I say. She's getting too close. Maybe we can figure it out. Find a specialist. She laughs soberly.
Figure it out.
It's too late to run. All I can do is lie. You can get better. Get back to yourself.
I am myself, she says. Maybe you can't accept that.
I guess not. My hands are numb from pulling at the handles. Are you gonna kill me?
I came back for you, she says.
I thought.
Well, doesn't matter what I thought now.
Are you gonna kill me? I ask again for no good reason.
I don't want to.
Then let me go. She reaches out her hand. Her sleeve falls away. Her skin peels. I see muscle and vein spun together, soft and delicate as lace. She's falling apart in front of my eyes. She lifts my chin with the bone of her thumb.
I can't.
We look at each other for a moment, as if we might burst out laughing, as if we both wish we could. The phone rings behind the front desk. She turns. The back of her skull is like a pale moon. I want to break it. I shove her to the ground. I expect resistance, but I must have caught her by surprise because she falls face first. I bring my foot down on the back of her neck where her spine splinters out of her skin. Her limbs spasm. It's like crushing a bug. It's exactly like crushing a bug. I stomp down again. Something spatters. What should be but isn't blood. Again. I observe this out of body, study this violent stranger. Finally, she's still. It takes too long for me to get to the phone. By the time I pick it up, no one's on the line. For some reason, I go on asking the dial tone for help. I notice a small red button. There's a grimy piece of masking tape underneath it with the word door written in smudged Sharpie. My fingers don't do what I tell them. They're weak and evasive. Press the damn button. I try to make a fist. I've got two flaccid hands. Fuck this fucking front door. I use my palm, but it's too slick with sweat. I slam my arm against it. There's a distant click. It's the most beautiful sound I've ever heard. It revitalizes me. I nearly trip over Julie's body on my way out. The doors open and a sob escapes me. This is the closest I've ever come to believing in God. The air smells so good. I didn't realize. It smelled like death in there. It's not raining anymore, but it's still cloudy. I manifest momentum, propel myself across the parking lot. My legs are stiff, tired, weakened with the relief of being out of that damn hotel. The lot is mostly empty. I count four cars. The one in the far corner is mine. As I get closer to it, I can tell there's something wrong, but I don't know what. My eyes aren't focusing. Everything is covered in fuzz. I pull my keys out of my pocket and hit unlock. Nothing happens. My tires are slashed. All of them. Completely deflated. It doesn't matter. It's a problem for me in 2 minutes. Future me. I pull open the door. My car is already unlocked. I shove the key in the ignition and turn it. The engine stammers. I assume it won't start, but it does. I lock the doors and find the car charger. I plug my phone in. I take a second to wipe the not blood spatter from my eyes, to take a deep breath in an attempt to steady my hands. They're trembling so badly, I can't grip the steering wheel. My phone chimes. Messages crowd my screen. Voicemail, Mabes. Voicemail, Malls. I don't know how many there are, and I don't wait to count. I dial. It doesn't even ring. She answers that fast. Are you coming? Molly, I say, crying so hard I don't sound like myself. Are you still at the hotel? Are you still with her? I hear May in the background. Lise, are you okay? Lise? I'm leaving. Where are you? We're at a clinic. I sent the address. Fuck, I shouldn't have left you. Elise, please come. It's okay. I'm coming. See you soon, I say. Or maybe I don't. There's shattered glass everywhere. It's in my hair, in my mouth. It's on my lap. There's a rock in my passenger seat. Julie's on my car, climbing through the windshield, pulling away the remaining shards of glass with her bare hands. They don't bleed. I do. I'm bleeding. I can taste it. I spit the glass from my mouth. She's climbing in head first. Her skull is split open, exposing green rot.
Did you think you could get rid of me that easy? She asks.
She's almost inside. Her clothes are in tatters. I can see her body, her bones, something worse. I ignore the glass going through my hand. I put the car in drive and unleash my foot onto the pedal. There's a moment of acceleration, the unearthly pitch of my non-existent tires against the pavement, the fight of the steering wheel, the tree. I open my eyes into the white cloud of the airbag. It smells like an attic, like mothballs. There's an emptiness in my ears. I'm the last one left at the party. It's sort of like I'm drunk. I can taste whiskey, only I know it's blood. My head delights in its throbbing, welcomes the proof of life. I still have all my fingers, at least on my left hand. I count them as I open the car door, collapse out onto the wet dirt. It stings my wounds. It's too late. It's in me now. There's no one in the passenger seat. There's no one underneath the car. Doesn't appear to be anyone between the car and the tree, but they're smashed together pretty good, so who knows? Anything's possible. Don't I know it? That's something Lou says whenever I tell her something she agrees with. Don't I know it? I miss her. I'd really like to see her again. To have her fuss about my split ends and make me Frito pie. Would it be better to go along the road or to cut through the woods? The woods get me to civilization faster, but I have a better chance of being seen on the road. I don't know if that's good or bad. I'm too dizzy. I'm really very dizzy. The woods rearrange around me. Every few steps, the trees get up, dance around, shuffle back and forth. I wonder if they know all the dances you're supposed to know. The ones that go along with those songs. The ones they play at weddings. There was a time when I thought I would never get married, because I was in love with a married man. But then I thought, maybe. It's not the trees that are moving. What did she say? She pretended to make a phone call. What else? It was like a walking shadow. She said she was afraid. You know, I say. I sound funny because of the cuts in my mouth. I felt abandoned too. You went to California. You went to Europe. You went to Maine. But you never came to visit me. I pause to give her a chance to respond. She doesn't. Maybe she doesn't want to give up her position. Maybe she knows I'm right. It wasn't easy for me. I was alone. You had your mom. You had Tristan,
I had no one. And it's not like Molly and May were supportive. You weren't, either, really. Just more understanding.
I see something, to my left.
I do love you. I always have. But I was jealous of you. I know it's an ugly thing to admit. I know I'm not supposed to tell you, but it's the truth. And I resented you because your life turned out so much better than mine. I want you to know I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry about Tristan. I'm sorry about all the things I've done to let you down. I guess there's a lot of them, but you should know you let me down too.
To my right now, she's circling me.
I can't do this anymore. If you're going to kill me, just do it. You'll have to live with yourself.
She steps out of the trees. She's fully transformed. I'm not sure if there's any of her left anymore. Not until she speaks.
I'm sorry, she says. I can't help it.
I think she's crying. It's hard to tell because there aren't any tears. I don't think her new eyes make them.
I can't help it. This is what I am now.
She's on her knees. Her hands are on her skull. She rocks back and forth in agony.
I'm so hungry, she says. I can't help it.
Julie!
Go!
She screams, a darkness harmonizing underneath.
Leave!
Julie, I'm so sorry.
Go! Please, now! Jules, please!
This will be the last time I ever see Julie. This creature in front of me who once shared my bed and fed me gummy vitamins, who borrowed my toothbrush and I didn't even care. I can't comprehend it. The world we built, the jokes that only we understand, the weird nicknames, the memories. We're each other's witnesses. Soul witnesses to so much that will now be lost, gone forever. I will never stop mourning the future we were supposed to have. I will never get over losing my best friend.
Elise,
she says, and I think I'll stay. Wouldn't it be better than being without her?
Please,
she asks, and when I look at her, I'm reminded she's already gone. So I run. I'm thinking about them. I summon their faces before me, their bodies walking ahead. I see silvery white hair, the sway of hips, uneven steps. I hear their voices, almost. The woods remind me of the house I shouldn't have gone into, that wasn't mine. I'm an intruder, only this time, there's no thrill. All I am is sorry. I've been wandering here for hours, maybe days, weeks, attempting to trace my footprints back to the parking lot, making more footprints. I'm frantic for the influx of light, the retreat of the trees, when I can welcome that monster of a hotel back into my sight. What I'd give for a cigarette. I separate my fingers. Lift an invisible one up to my lips. Inhale. Hold. Exhale. Anything to ignore the fear. It's unlike any I've ever experienced. Not like the kind that lurks under the bed or inside dark closets. Not like a slow knock on the door late at night. Not like being next in line for an old rickety roller coaster. It's free of anticipation and full of acceptance. I never thought much about death. I figured the lights would go out and it wouldn't matter because I wouldn't know the difference. But it does matter. I can't remember a time when I felt like I belonged in the world, but I'm not ready to leave it. I'm suddenly drowning in affection for everything, for my friends, yes, and for Lou, Rick, but also for me, for my stupid, messy life, all the minutiae. Sipping foam from a cappuccino, putting on socks warm from the dryer, hitting the snooze button. I would give anything to be back in Buffalo, dead smack in the middle of winter, freezing, but alive, alive, alive. And in the summer, it's really something else. Blue sky, walking along canal side in the shade of the silos, the smell of Cheerios wafting from the General Mills plant. It's perfect. And my apartment, my shitty studio apartment, it's small, but it's mine, and I would kiss that drafty window. If I could go back, I would bake cookies for my mean landlord and say hi to my neighbors. Be polite. I would wake up early, eat a proper breakfast, eggs and fruit and whole grain toast and orange juice with reduced sugar. I would volunteer on the weekends, wear sunscreen, floss. That's not true. I probably wouldn't do any of those things. But I would try harder. I would do better. I wouldn't waste so much time. I've wasted so much time, and now I have none left. I'm not ready. My left foot might be broken, and I'm bleeding, but I don't know from where. The pain is searing, but I'm in love with it because it means I still have my body. I still have my life. There's no future beyond the next slow, labored step except another step. Maybe it would help to picture something more. A future where I have a new job that's fun and fulfilling, where I wear tailored blazers and my hair is always done. A future where I travel to Italy, sun myself on the Amalfi Coast, and stand in the ruins of Pompeii. Honestly, I don't care what the future looks like, however wonderful or mediocre or disastrous. I just want it. But there's the whispering of leaves in the wind, the snapping of a twig somewhere. What might be there? What might not be ready to let me go after all? I can't move any faster. I gather my sleeve in my hand and wipe the blood from my face. It's too dark to see. A terrible cold rises from the flats of my feet and finds its way up my calves. It's spreading. I'm losing circulation. I'm going numb. No, 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 no. At first, I think it's the echo of my cries, but it isn't. It's a deep growling, fast approaching. Two yellow eyes in the complete, total darkness. They find me, and I feel nothing, not even fear. As I wait for the ambulance, cloaked in a Mylar blanket, drinking tepid water that stings like antiseptic, that tastes like rust, I shake my head in utter disbelief. I didn't realize it was a car, I tell the officer. Not until it almost ran me over. What do you think it was? She asks, concerned for my sanity or genuinely curious. I shrug, holding the truth under my tongue. 9. We get back from dinner, soaked to the bone. May gives us fresh towels, turns up the heat. Another rainy, cold October. It's been a year, the first anniversary. We don't know what else to do but to be together. I'm going to make tea, May says. I have green peach, Earl Grey, matcha.
Earl Grey, Molly says.
Me too, please. We've been drinking a lot of tea lately. Molly says it's because we're getting old. She says it's only a matter of time until we're carrying around coupon books and grapefruit spoons.
Don't you say anything, May warns Molly from the kitchen. We're not old.
She's right. We're not. But I welcome the years. I will take as many as I can get. I look forward to them. To the life I have left to live. There's only the one thing.
Lise,
Molly says, twisting her wet bangs into a single spiral.
What is it? You've got your thinking face on.
It's just hard, I say. I want to put it all behind me, but it's bittersweet because the more time that goes by, the longer we've been without her. Before,
we would have let the conversation die here. The subject would be changed. A joke would be made. But things are different now. I poke with my tongue at the insides of my cheeks, these back alleys of my mouth. Cuts that didn't heal quite right. Stitches that were meant to dissolve, but instead were absorbed into my skin. A new part of me, sharp and small.
I get it.
I know what you mean, Molly says. Her mouth isn't the same either. She used to wear a perpetual grin, subtle, almost smug, like she knew something you never would. But if you did, man, you'd be grinning too. It was part of the DNA of her face. But I didn't really notice until it was gone.
Yes, May says, setting down coasters on the coffee table.
I understand. Maybe it's good we don't look the same, because we aren't the same. It's good there's physical evidence. In my mouth, Molly's mouth, in May's now imperfect posture, her shoulders hunched from the weight of what we've been through, in the way my neck is fucked because I'm forever looking over my shoulder. There's no forgetting what happened, because we see it in one another. We don't want to forget. We don't want to bury it under the floorboards. May sits in the armchair across from me, rests her feet on my lap.
You okay?
She asks me.
You need anything?
I'm good, Mabes.
What about you, Molly? What's on your mind?
Well, I was just thinking, she says, and pauses for a deep sigh, leaning forward.
About that peanut butter bread pudding. You remember? We had it the first night at the hotel. Fucking amazing.
Things are different, but not so different. I'm grateful for that.
Trip wasn't all bad, Molly says.
May makes her clicking noise. I can almost hear her laugh, I say, and it's true. I can hear Julie's laugh. Like she's next to me, like she's got her head on my shoulder. I can smell her shampoo, her scalp. That's what intimacy is, I think. That's love, knowing the smell of someone else's head. I get whiffs of it sometimes, randomly. What a funny kind of ghost, a phantom scent. We sit drinking our tea, the city sputtering around us and beyond the city. A web of suburbs and more cities and more suburbs and rivers and lakes and farms and saddled bus stations and dive bars where women dressed in new denim are a whiskey away from meeting their soon-to-be exes. There are interstates and back roads and police cars and diners with weak coffee. There are people safe in their beds about to turn out the lights. Little girls trading secrets and friendship bracelets from parallel sleeping bags. And beyond and in between all that are stark, wild woods and what I know roams there. I know what waits there. And I wonder if it's alone, if it's sad or angry or remorseful or any part human. I wonder if it remembers me. I wonder if it knows where I am, because I still think about her all the time. She's the footsteps that approach a little too quickly, the odd shape moving in my periphery. She's the inexplicable chill, the hum of an awakening vent. She's every shift in the silence, every creak of the floorboards, every elusive shadow. She's with me. In my fear, my loss, wherever I go, I know she will follow. This is Sarah Scott. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Return by Rachel Harrison. This program was directed by Francis Loy, executive producer Dan Musselman. Text copyright 2020. By Rachel Harrison. Production copyright 2020, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.